Sup? I'm resting and I'm just thinking out loud. Cue music.
What is up, my Steinsers? And today we are going to be reading Unsolved Mysteries. So, let's get right to it. Sickening noises. In December 2016, a CIA officer checked into the American Embassy's health office in Havana, suffering from nausea, headache, and dizziness. Days later, two more CIA officers reported similar ailments. By late 2018, the number grew to 26 Americans and 13 Canadians experiencing nausea, hearing loss, vertigo, nosebleeds, and focusing issues. In all the cases, victims claimed that the symptoms were triggered by a strange noise they'd heard at their homes or hotel rooms. One person said the noise was high-pitched. Another described a beam of sound pointed into their rooms. Some insisted that the noise more closely resembled marbles rolling along the floor. The illnesses confounded medical experts, doctors at the University of Pennsylvania, who exclaimed some of the victims diagnosed concussion-like symptoms, but found no signs they'd suffered concussions. We know what you must be thinking. The Cuban government is up to something, right? The Cubans vehemently deny they're responsible, and many American investigators believe them. That's because they still don't know who or what made the victims sick. Was it a new type of weapon? The CIA claims it doesn't know of any weaponry that could cause these symptoms. What about ultrasound? One theory holds that a pair of covert eavesdropping devices placed too close to each other by Cuban agents may have inadvertently produced such a reaction. Like the kind of feedback you hear when someone stands too close to a microphone. But the FBI has found no evidence to substantiate that argument. In fact, ultrasound is above the range of human hearing. Recordings of the sound from the victims only added to the confusion. Two scientists who studied the recordings believe they captured the sound of lovelorn male crickets. One scientist, Alexander Stubbs, of the University of California, Berkeley, says the insects are incredibly loud. You can hear them from inside a diesel truck going 40 miles an hour on a highway. Still, the scientists had no idea why the sounds might lead to illness in humans. Maybe it was just nerves. Cuba is a high-threat, high-stress post. A former embassy official told ProPublica.org diplomats are warned that there will be surveillance. There will be listening devices in your house, probably in your car. For some people, that puts them in a high-stress mentality, in a threat anticipation mode. True, but then how to explain what happened in China? In May 2018, an American posted in the consulate and Guangzhou, please tell me if I'm pronouncing that wrong, was diagnosed with the very same mystery illness. Ultimately, 15 Americans were evacuated. Well, the seemingly airborne cause of these brain injuries were still a mystery. The fallout is clear. The Americans removed 60% of their diplomats from Cuba and expelled 15 Cuban diplomats from Washington, D.C. The mysterious sounds may well be the opening shots in a new kind of Cold War. Roaming ruins. It's not unusual to find junk in Brazil's Guanabara Bay, but what Robert Marks unearthed there in 1982 was an unusual kind of foreign matter. In an underwater field, the size of 3 tennis courts located 15 miles from shore, lay the remains of some 200 Roman ceramic jars. A few fully intact. According to Marks, a professional treasure hunter, the jars appeared to be twin-handled amphorae that were used to transport goods such as grains and wine in the 3rd century. But how did they get there? The first Europeans didn't reach Brazil until 1500. The Romans, who traded primarily in the Mediterranean port cities and the Middle East, had little incentive to invest in ships that could cross oceans. However, they did sail as far as India. Perhaps some untrained navigator lost his way in a storm. Or maybe mutineers steered the ship westward. We may never know, nor are we likely to uncover more evidence. Brazil closed the Bay of Jars to further research in 1983. In an effort to deter looters, it said, Marx claims the government didn't want the area explored because finding Roman-era artifacts there would mean that, contrary to Brazil's official history, the Portuguese were not the first Europeans to reach the country. And the truth? It's resting 100 feet under the sea. Twin reincarnations. Identical twins Gillian and Jennifer Pollock were born on October 4th, 1958, into a family scared by tragedy. On a Sunday morning in May 1957, their older sisters Jacqueline, 6, and Joanna, 11, had been struck and killed by a car while walking hand in hand to church in their small English parish of Hexham. When the twins arrived 17 months later, John Pollock was certain they were actually his dead daughters reborn. Their mother, Florence Pollock, wasn't so sure. But then odd things happened. When the twins began talking, they would ask for the same toys their sisters had played with. These toys they could not have known existed, because they had long been stored away. Although the Pollocks had left Hexham when the twins were less than a year old, when they brought them for a visit, their first visit, at age 4, the twins pointed out locations that had been meaningful to their sisters, but which the twins had never seen, such as the school the deceased sisters had attended, and their favorite playground. Even more chilling were the twins' apparent memories of the deaths of their sisters. Up until the age of 5, each suffered recurring nightmares of being run over by a car. These nightmares sometimes evolved into daytime terrors. The car! It's coming for us! The twins would shriek at the mere sound of a car engine firing up in a small alleyway. Florence, a reincarnation skeptic, couldn't think of any rational explanation for how the twins had come to act out their sister's agonizing final moments with such apparent accuracy. The blood's coming out of your eyes, Gillian would cry, cradling her sister's head tenderly in her arms as John and Florence looked on in horror. It's where the car hit you. In 1963, Dr. Ian Stevenson, an expert on reincarnation at the University of Virginia, began to study the Pollock sisters. Finding no evidence that the twins' apparent past life memories had been manufactured or suggested by their parents, he concluded it was virtually impossible not to believe they were living proof of reincarnation. The twins' memories gradually faded as they reached adolescence. Then, for a brief period in her early 20s, Gillian experienced a series of visions of herself as a young child playing in a sandbox surrounded by gardens and in an orchard. Then, Pollocks immediately recognized that as their home in Wickham, the village where they'd lived with Joanna in the years before Jacqueline had been born. The catch? Gillian had never been to Wickham. And now for our last story, Missing on a Mountain. On January 23rd, 1959, nine college students and their tour guide, Igor Dyatlov, set out on what was to be a 21-day hiking excursion through the Ural Mountains in the former USSR. On February 2nd, the group skied down Mount Otterton, English translation, Mount Don't Go There. On February 12th, when the group was scheduled to return home, only one student, 21-year-old Yuri Yudin, had arrived, and he had left the group early because of illness. When none of the others came home, a search party was organized. What the searchers found would haunt them. On February 26th, they discovered the hikers' tents. It had been sliced open from the inside. There were multiple pairs of snowy footprints, some made with bare feet leading away from it. The bodies of the first two hikers were found wearing only underwear beneath a tall cedar tree, the flesh on their hands raw and pulpy from attempt to scramble up the trunk. The next two were found one day later, and another hiker 6 days later, all showing signs of hypothermia. One had a fractured skull. It wasn't until the spring thaw began in May that the remaining four were discovered under 13 feet of snow in a ravine 82 yards from the cedar tree. Three had clearly died of severe internal injuries consisting with a tremendous physical impact comparable to a car crash, including skull and rib fractures, yet none bore visible external injuries. It was as if a deadly force had crushed them without having actually touched them. They had all apparently died on the 11th day of their trip. February 2nd, the last day on which any of them had written in their journals. The investigation continued, and in late May it took a shocking turn. Some of the hikers' clothing tested positive for radioactivity. On May 28th, 1959, One day after the Soviet military got wind of the results of the radiation testing, the investigation was summarily closed. The official conclusion, the hikers had met with an unnamed overwhelming force. Of course, that abrupt announcement just intensified public speculation. Theories have included an explosion of a Soviet test missile and a UFO attack, hallucinogenic drugs, and even a Bigfoot-like monster. If I had a chance to ask God just one question, said Yudin, the one surviving skier, who died in 2013 at age 75, it would be, what really happened to my friends that night? Their memory at least lives on at the spot where they died. It is now called the Dyatlov Pass. So, those were a few unsolved mystery stories from a Reader's Digest that I bought at Walmart. So I think these are actually true stories that actually happened, and they just have not been solved. No one knows what the heck happened. If you have any theories on what happened to those hikers, or some logical explanation for the twin reincarnation story, then let me know. Send me a voice message saying what you think, and make any requests for any future episodes, like what you want to see me talk about, or you can't really see me, what you want to hear me talk about in any future episodes. Bye!